Welcome back. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And if you just joined us, we just ran a segment with Rue McClanahan, which you can hear on our website by the end of the day today if you missed it. But I'm pleased to have with us now Angelina Benedetti and Catherine Lord from King County Library System. Last year, more than 400 books were banned or challenged in the United States. And these two ladies are experts in the field, joining me today to talk about Banned Books Week and celebrating the freedom to read. We'll find out what that means, why we should care, and how we can participate in the nationwide movement. So ladies, first of all, welcome to the show today. Pleased to have you here.
Thank you very much.
And why don't we start off with just a little introduction on both of you. Catherine Lord, why don't we start with you? Just tell us a little bit about what you do and what your role is with the library system.
Well, my role with the library system is that I'm a managing librarian, and I've been a librarian pretty much all of my life. My interest in intellectual freedom is as a librarian, and I've done a lot of training throughout the state and some throughout the country, and I've published a book on how to support and defend intellectual freedom in libraries.
Oh, excellent. And Angelina Benedetti, you are the manager of Selection and Order, I believe.
Right. I'm the manager of Selection and Order, and we are the folks who make sure that all of the great stuff gets into the libraries, the people who do the buying of all of that. And in addition to that, Catherine and I are on the extended faculty at the University of Washington's Information School, where we teach the intellectual freedom course for them.
I didn't even know there was such a thing. That's great. Is that open to, like, general students?
No, it's specifically for the library
program.
Specific
for libraries. Okay. Right. Well, let's talk about banned books and the celebration of the freedom to read and what that means in the larger context. I know this movement goes on once a year in September, the last week of September, I believe, across the nation here. And as I said at the beginning, more than 400 books were challenged last week. So who wants to kick off and tell us what Banned Books Week means?
I'd like to just start here that it's a celebration. Banned Books, we have a lot of fun with Banned Books Week in the libraries, and it's a celebration of our freedom, but it's also an acknowledgement that that freedom is more than just about what I want to read. It's supporting and acknowledging that that means freedom for everyone, including those with whom we might disagree.
Important, yeah. Did you have anything to add to that, Angela?
I just wanted to add the difference between a banned book and a book that's challenged. A banned book is a book that has actually had its status changed or it's been removed from the library for any reason as a result of a challenge. A challenged book is one where a patron, you know, has come and said, this is not something that I agree with, which often starts a dialogue and a conversation with the librarian about why the library chose indeed to have that material in the library. And a lot of times those challenges can work out to serve an education function.
Okay. Now, the library puts on, is it just in the library system? I know you work very closely with the bookstores as well to celebrate this week. What kind of things are you doing to celebrate this week?
Well, I think a lot of libraries will put up displays and feature banned books for the week. Some places will have programs. I know that Book It has done, that's a local theater, has done programs for banned book weeks in the past.
And I know that we also put out a lot of literature to talk to folks about banned and challenged materials and why it's important that we have this open forum in the library to make sure that we have a broad collection for everyone.
Okay. So, Angelina, what are some of the top books that have been banned this year? I don't mind who answers that, but...
No, that's okay. Surprisingly, the number one most challenged book this year, or in the year 2007 recorded, was a picture book called Entango Makes Three, and it's by Justin Richardson and Peter Parnell, and it's about two male penguins that were given an egg by the zookeeper to raise, and there are a lot of folks who are really upset about this picture book because of the idea of a homosexual penguin couple raising a baby penguin. And while it is based indeed on a true story, It is one that has really gotten some folks upset. And surprisingly, this picture book is really, you know, it's gotten folks up in arms. The Chocolate War by Robert Cormier is a book that's been around for at least 30 years and surprisingly still comes up tops on the lists because of its incendiary subject matter. It's described as having sexually explicit or offensive language. A lot of the top 10 books are going to be books that are most challenged, are going to be books that have a youth market because mm-hmm. folks are worried that if kids read sexually explicit material or if they read language that is offensive or exposed to certain ideas, that it will somehow harm them.
Well, who is challenging these books? Let's go back to the penguin one because, you know, I saw that film that Morgan Freeman narrated about penguins, and it was definitely the male who stood on that egg for a long, long time to raise it. So who is doing the challenging of these books?
You know, it can be individual patrons who read something in a book and object to it, but there are also organized groups that have lists of books that they would like folks to go into libraries and challenge and that encourage that because of particular subject matter that they find sensitive. So it can be both an individual response to a book or it can be a more organized approach.
Mm. Are there particular books that have been challenged that have really shocked you? You're just really surprised. Obviously, I know that first one for you was a big shock.
I think that in most books that I have seen that are challenged, it's a surprise to me. Some examples are The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, The Diary of Anne Frank, The Color Purple, Native Son. You know, some of my favorite books are right up there on that list. And one thing that may surprise a lot of folks is that Harry Potter is one of the number one most challenged books of all time in history.
I saw that J.K. Rowling, one of the number one most challenged authors, too. What other authors have been most challenged?
Robert Cormier is one that over time, because he spoke to a teen market and also because his books had very challenging themes, kids really confronting some hard situations. Yeah. Chris Crutcher, who is a local author, Spokane area author, is one that has been frequently challenged across the country, both for his challenging themes and some of the language that he uses in his book, but also because folks have felt that he has been insensitive to race, which he would argue quite strenuously.
Mm. So if somebody challenges a book, what's the next step? What's the process it goes through? And then who says, you know, forget it? It's still going to stay on the shelves or no, we need to pull this off the shelves?
Well, it starts usually in the libraries. In public libraries, it generally will start with somebody will take a complaint or a challenge to the frontline staff, and the staff will need to listen to them and listen to their reasons that they may want to change the access status of that item. And then the patron may or may not want to take it further. When they take it further, I think, Angie, you should carry it from here.
When they take it further, our department, which is the selection department, frequently gets that complaint. And we respond to each and every challenge and complaint that we have from our patrons. Surprisingly, we receive more challenges for materials that for whatever reason we've decided not to purchase for the library, whether it's something that's very obscure or academic or if it's something that is in a format that's really not quite appropriate for the library, but for whatever reason we've chosen not to collect it. We get a lot of feedback about those as well. But we make sure that we respond to each of those complaints, research them, take them seriously, and respond to them.
One of the ones that made me raise my eyebrows when I was looking through the list of banned books was Maya Angelou's I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. Mm-hmm. What was the rationale behind challenging that? Do you remember?
Generally, I believe it's because of the subject matter. If I remember, she's sexually abused in that novel, it's a biography, if I'm correct. And that is something that folks feel is too explicit for the age group, that it is often, you know, a lot of high school libraries will have that book. And there are also a number of these challenges that revolve around school curriculums. In other words, a parent might be objecting to a book not just to have it in a library, but say because it's on a particular reading list for a school. I know that there have been local challenges recently, a big one in the Renton School District recently for Huckleberry Finn.
Most challenges actually do come in school libraries rather than in public libraries. There are more in schools. And most of them come from parents. Parents are the number one type of individual who bring challenges to libraries. And, you know, it's appropriate for parents to be watching what their kids are reading and to be guiding them and influencing them. And the issue comes in when parents are trying to remove books from the shelves for other people's kids. And that's where the libraries need to step in and support others' rights to read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was surprised when I was doing research. There's a lot written on this. There were many, many websites. We'll give some of those out toward the end of the program where you can go and check all of this information. But I was really surprised to see that some books went under that challenge situation just because of one person. Mm-hmm. It's as though, you know, we were supposed to live in a democracy, but yet that one person complains and instantly there were some examples where books were pulled while they were challenged.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that really becomes a problem when a library, because of a challenge, decides that they're going to pull the material and say, okay, nobody has access to this while we're researching this. It really does become, in effect, a banning at that point because the library's chosen to change the status of a material while it's in the challenge process.
Mm. To me, it's a little bit like putting someone in jail before they've been tried.
Right, right. And I brought in a couple of my books that I had from childhood. I think nearly all the books I read as a kid have been either, you know, challenged to the point where they don't exist or they don't exist in their original form anymore. But one of them was Little Black Sambo, which I loved as a child mm-hmm. because I got to learn about this little boy who lived in a foreign country. And they wore different clothes and had a different culture. And he was incredibly brave. And I didn't have the book from childhood, but when I was shopping a few weeks back, I came across it in Borders. The publisher had just released it, and I just want to read what the publisher wrote. I think this was banned in 1956 in Toronto. But, you know, obviously I had it in England. It was not banned there for a while. And the publisher said, during the last 30 years, the book and its little hero have been the center of a big controversy. Sambo became to some a symbol of racism, and to others he remained a longtime favorite. And the reason that the publisher republished, he said, we're reissuing this book as a window on our past. So is that not important in your minds to have this window as a past?
Absolutely. You need to have the literature. You need to preserve literature to show what people are thinking and were thinking during times in history. That's the, you know, racism is a common reason that items are challenged as well. And it's the reason that Huck Finn has been so often challenged. But again, we don't want to put something away and forget it. We want to be able to remember what has gone on in history and how people perceived the world.
Yeah. And it can open a dialogue. And so it's not just the story, it's also the story about the story, that this is something that was important to many people in childhood. I know I loved the story as a child as well. And being able to talk about it now and say, it's an important story. It's something that we need to make sure that folks have access to. And here's why. Here's the history of it. And here's where it can fit into the whole spectrum.
Yeah. And it's a measure of where we've been and where we're going, too. A few years ago, was back at school taking a literature class. And one girl there strongly objected. She was in her 20s, strongly, strongly objected to reading William Shakespeare because she said he was sexist. But, you know, I mean, how many hundreds of years ago was that written? And the way I look at it is we get a snapshot of that time and of the thinking and of the experiences of those people.
And he also has some of the strongest female characters ever written.
He does.
I mean, where would we be without Lady Macbeth?
Well, true. Where would we be? Is there, in your minds, ever a time when censorship is appropriate?
It can be very difficult to say no to that because I think all of us have things that personally offend us. And in my position, I, you know, selecting the materials for the library system, there are many times when I select something that does not meet my personal taste. But I always have to come back to, there are folks out there who need access to this information. There are folks whose taste or personal interest it does reflect. And I need to be open to collecting that for the entire library system, even if it's something that personally is offensive to me.
I think that the time that censorship is appropriate is when we are applying it to ourselves. And I'm a parent, and as I have raised my children, there have been times when I have said, no, I don't want my child yet watching this type of thing on video, or I don't yet want my child to be reading this book. There have been those times, and then when I'm ready. But again, that needs to fall on the parents' shoulders and not on the libraries.
Mm. I want to just bring up, I don't want to talk politics, I think we've had enough of it this week, but the Patriot Act affected many, many different freedoms in our land. And I was at a party just a couple of weeks ago talking to a bookseller who said that they have to track certain books that have been sold. What's your one of you is looking really surprised, one of you is nodding. So Angelina's looking surprised. Mm-hmm. Catherine, are you aware of that?
I'm hearing that they need to track books that are...
That certain books that are sold.
Oh.
Certain books have been red flagged, and if people buy them, they need to... They need to keep a list.
That is surprising and unsettling to me. It's very unsettling.
All right.
Especially since in the library system, we take great pains to make sure that we don't keep those records. So we know that there are certain books that are frequently lost or stolen, you know, stolen from the shelves that we frequently have to replace. And many of them are things that show up on banned book lists. But we make it a point that information, you know, while you have something checked out, that information is there on your patron record attaching the book to the person. But we don't keep that for any long period of time. It's not something where we would track it.
Well, that's comforting.
The library was brought into the Patriot. The Patriot Act actually doesn't even refer to the library in its original version. But there was a very small section in there that had to do with access to records and the rights to access those records, that basically removed people's rights to protection of privacy in a way that librarians were not comfortable with. And it was really went against everything that we had been trained in terms of confidentiality. There has been a reauthorization of the Patriot Act, however, that has changed that some. And yeah, things are a little different now.
There was a period of time when librarians were walking around with buttons that said "Another Hysterical Librarian for Freedom," because we seemed to be one of the strongest stances against the Patriot Act, because we didn't want to be put in the position of having to give those records over to the government.
Well, thank goodness. Thank goodness. Why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we'll talk some more with Angelina Benedetti and Catherine Lord of the King County Library System. We're talking about Banned Books Week. And the celebration, we're celebrating the freedom to read. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Samuel Richardson, Henry Fielding, Lawrence Stern,
hello,
Mary Wollstonecraft,
vindicated,
Jane Austen,
here I am,
Sir Walter Scott.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Looking for new fiction authors? For a different kind of book? For good writing that challenges the mind, the heart, the spirit? Then check out Book Talk Podcasting at 1150kknw.com. Book Talk brings you weekly bite-sized book reviews brought to you by Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. You can listen to Book Talk Podcasts at 1150kknw.com or anytime by downloading them to your MP3 player. If you'd like to try your hand at submitting a review, email info@conversationslive.net for more information. To listen to Book Talk, go to 1150kknw.com and click on podcasting. It's that simple.
Attention all MoneyWise business women. If you're ready to take your business to the next level, make great connections with other business women, and learn how to achieve your goals from female business experts, come to the MoneyWise Business Women Conference, a safe place to learn about money. The all-day MoneyWise Business Women Conference comes to North Seattle Community College Saturday, October 25th. It features 2 keynote speakers and 16 breakout sessions, all led by female professional experts. Attend the MoneyWise Business Women Conference and leave with tips, tools, and resources to empower and motivate you in business, connections with like-minded business women, and your own support team. Where else could you find all this MoneyWise business expertise and enjoy a full day of safe learning for just $79? That includes access to both keynote speeches, all conference sessions, lunch, and the gift of Marsha Brixey's book, The Money Therapist, A Woman's Guide to Creating a Healthy Financial Life. Mark your calendar for Saturday, October 25th, and register today to receive your spot at the MoneyWise Business Women Conference, a safe place to learn about money. Register at moneywisewomen.net. That's moneywisewomen.net. Or call 360-308-0056. 360-308-0056.
Negativity and fear, two staples of talk radio. Well, we figured we'd try something different. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Balzac, we Edgar Allan Poe. Charlotte Bronte.
Okay, I love that music, Eric. Thank you. I knew you'd find something good. We're talking about Banned Books Week today. We are celebrating the freedom to read. And I have to tell you that when I was doing research for this show today, because I'm talking with two experts, I didn't want to look like a total dingbat. I was totally shocked to see how many of my favorite books have made it on that banned or challenged list. Over 400 books were challenged in banned or challenged in the United States last year. So my guests are Angelina Benedetti. She is the manager of selection and order, and Catherine Lord, intellectual freedom specialist, and they're both from King County Library System. So, ladies, I'd like to look a little bit more at some of the books that were challenged last year, and we've mentioned a couple. How about we talk about some more and look a little bit more in detail about why they were challenged and what's happening with that?
I was really surprised this year not to see Harry Potter in the top 10 most challenged, because as Catherine had mentioned, it is one of the most challenged books of all times, or the series is one of the most challenged and its author so frequently challenged. But I was surprised in its place to see a book that I had been waiting to see come up on the list for a long time, which is Philip Pullman's The Golden Compass. And many folks object to that series because of what is seen as an anti-religious viewpoint.
Oh, really?
Yes. Particularly in the third book of the series, there's a real sense that that somehow the author is not writing from a religious perspective. And so I was not surprised to see the book show up in the top 10 this year.
That's so interesting, because also on the lists over the years, this is Banned Book Week began in 1982, and over the years, the Bible has been banned. I think actually that was like 20, it was banned for about 30 years at one point, way, way back in the 20s to the 50s, I think, in certain places, the Quran. So it's like we can't have a balance there. It's
one
we want
or the
to
other.
Ban religion, and we want to ban it when it's not religious. What other books have surprised you?
Well, I can tell you another one that I'm not surprised by, which is in the, again, in the top 10. There's a book that has been challenged, I think, even since it was published, called It's Perfectly Normal. And it is a very basic sex education book for a lower grade child. Or, you know, that can be worked with, however, what year the parent wants to work with the child in teaching sex ed. But again, going back to the schools that have sex education books have to be very careful to make sure that they are age appropriate. And there are still often going to be objections to them being in a collection, because folks are going to feel that this is not appropriate material to have in a school.
Mm.
One that's really surprised me is To Kill a Mockingbird. Of course, one of my all-time favorites. And
That's been challenged many more times than once, though, right? Yes.
And another is Catcher in the Rye, of course, which is required reading for so many kids as well. It's interesting how many of these titles you probably recognize as books that teens read. And I think that teens are the population that folks who bring challenges, they're trying to protect most of all. And it's because that's the age where they're starting to sort of, we're losing control of them, you know, and they're beginning to discover those gritty facts of reality. It's hard. It's hard as a parent, I think.
When I was going through the list, I noticed that many of the ones that were actually banned in schools were for sexual explicit behavior or homosexuality or rape scenes. And, I was thinking back to when I was at school, made me feel really old because we didn't have anything ever like that in school. We're just looking at a generation gap here. I mean, because kids are, if you go to the bookstores, this is what's on the bookshelves, right?
You know, having worked with teens, in many ways, I think parents are afraid that by reading, because as a former teen librarian, that was what I'd done before I worked with materials. And I saw so often that parents were afraid that by reading material about sex or with bad language, that would somehow have an impact on whether or not the teen chose to become sexually active or that they used particular language. In so many cases, that's why these books are being objected to, when really a teen's value system is formed at home in most cases. Mm. And if your teen has a certain set of values, they're going to have a certain set of values after they read this book. And in so many cases, the sexually explicit parts are not done in a licentious way. They're done something to turn them on. It's more, let's talk about this in a real context, and let's talk about, in many cases, abuse situations, which has a cautionary tale for teens who are reading them.
Mm. We all probably are familiar with Salman Rushdie, and who wrote his book, it was probably 20-some years ago now. And was it that long ago? I can't remember
probably
now.
Probably about 15, Satanic Verses.
Yeah, and he went into hiding, and I read that he still has to have police protection when he's in England 24/7. Do you ever run across groups that make challenges like that, and is that handled any differently?
We recently had Irshad Manji speak at the library system, and she had received threats at different points along her book tour, and so we wanted to make sure that we did have access to the program, that folks were able to see her, but there was a little sense of worry.
I am not familiar with her, so who was she and what did she write?
She had written a book that was particular, and I don't have the details in front of me, but she'd written a book that was particularly challenging to her religious, that she'd said, that this was the way that women were treated in her religion, and I believe it was Islam, and that there were
Did you say Ayaan Hirsi?
No, Irshad Manji.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there was another lady, very similar situation, who'd written about Islam and is under police protection now. Yeah.
Exactly. And while we felt it was very important to have her at the library system.
Mm. Well, we've looked at some of the books that have been banned and challenged. Let's look at some of your favorite books that people maybe don't know about and should be reading, or kids should be reading. And let's talk about celebrating the freedom to read, the fun side of things. So who wants to kick off there?
Well, I'll start out with one of my favorite series for kids, and that's Boys Who Are Reluctant Readers. This is a surefire, it's a great series, and that's the Captain Underpants series. And that was a series that's been challenged many times.
I was going to say, that been challenged?
Yes, it absolutely has. But, I remember when my son was that age and reading was a struggle for him, and that was something that he picked up. It was funny. He could relate to it. And he read that series. He had the posters on his wall. And it's so wonderful as a parent to see your kids finding something that they enjoy.
Yeah, definitely. How about you, Angelina?
as a teenager, I read Kurt Vonnegut simply because he was banned in so many places. And I'm
that sounds like a teenager.
I'm so glad that I did. And still, you know, even after his death, there are so many challenged books of his that are challenged because of their content. And I still would recommend them for anyone, although I think that some of the political situations that he's talking about might be a little less relevant to teens. I was also surprised to see on the top 10 a book called Olive's Ocean by Kevin Hankes, which is really a sweet and gentle story about a girl confronting death and trying to get beyond the death of a classmate. And so I was surprised to see it there because I it says that it's for sexually explicit or offensive language, and I can't remember any. Recently, and I although I was surprised and it wasn't in the top 10 most challenged books, but one that really received a terrific amount of press when it was challenged was Susan Petrone's The Higher Power of Lucky. It won the Newbery a few years back, and Susan Petrone is a librarian. And she, in fact, she was a collection development librarian, and she said it was so funny that she was the person that so often had to respond to patron challenges, and now she was in a position of having to defend her own book.
Oh, interesting.
She put the word scrotum on the first page, particularly describing a rattlesnake biting a dog's scrotum. And while the scene was meant to be humorous, it was one where folks read that in what was a Newbery Award-winning book, and immediately the eyes popped and said, my goodness, this is not something that should have won the award. This is something that, you know, I'm not even sure I want to put it in my collection. And so really there were school librarians who were some of the first challengers of that book.
Oh, interesting. Well, we have just a couple of minutes left. What would you like to leave our listeners with today? What would you like to tell them about Banned Books Week and this, and celebrating the freedom to read?
Well, it's your freedom. It's not something librarians made up to bring controversy to our lives. It's a difficult thing sometimes for librarians to support because we're pleasers, and when someone comes in and is angry about something, you know, we want to make them happy, and it's difficult because we do need to defend the rights of everybody to be able to access what's in their library. So celebrate your freedom, the First Amendment, and your right to read.
And celebrate the fact that you have this resource in your community, that you can go to your public library and have access to this wealth of materials, that you have the ability to pick a banned or a challenged book off of the shelf and read it and enjoy it and find out if it's how it is that you personally feel about it.
Perfect. And if somebody wants to find out more about Banned Books Week, how they can participate, what's going on, where should we direct them to?
A great website is www.ala.org, and there is information about Banned Books Week there. Also, don't be shy about joining your local friends group with your friends of your library, and be there and support your library.
The ALA stands for the American Library Association, and they are the sponsors of Banned Book Week. And really, if you go to just their head page, www.ala.org, there will be lots of information to link to, especially now since this is Banned Book Week.
Perfect. Thank you, ladies. I really appreciate you being with us today and educating us and certainly opening my eyes today. And I want to thank each of you for listening in today. If you have questions or feedback on today's show, you can reach me, Vicki, at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. Or you can reach me through the website at conversationslive.net. And both this and the pre-recording with Rue McClanahan that we played earlier today will be on the website by the end of tonight. So you can check it out if you missed some information there. And please join me next Monday at noon. Until then, live well, live strong, and thank you for spending this hour with me on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Coming up October 13th on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, a full hour with medical intuitive Dr. Carol Reitberger. She's an innovative leader in the fields of personality typology and intuitive medicine, and the executive director of the Reitberger Institute, where she helps students access and develop their intuition for business, personal, and spiritual growth. Mark your calendars for Monday, October 13th at noon for health and healing through the eyes of a medical intuitive. That's right here on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.